Hi, and welcome to this episode of DebtWired. I'm Dawn Vocock, Senior Legal Analyst for DebtWire Europe. On this episode, we speak with Simmons & Simmons, Christopher Krantz and Simon Kirschner about the German Starbuck procedure with a focus on the innovative softline restructuring. Christopher and Simon, thank you for joining us today. The German Act on the Stabilization and Restructuring Framework for Businesses, which is also known as the Starbuck, came into force on the 1st of January, implementing the EU Restructuring Directive, which obliges all EU member states to establish preventive restructuring frameworks into German law. Last year, the Starbuck procedure experienced a number of firsts, with high-profile cases including Leoni and Jerry Weber. One particularly innovative case was that of listed IT company Softline. Our speakers today acted for the majority shareholder, Noventic, which took over the entire equity under the Starbuck. To kick us off, please can you walk us through the deal and the mechanics of how it was implemented?
Yeah, thank you very much, Dawn, for having us today, and very happy to give you a bit of an overview of what we did in the Softline case. So I think with all restructurings, it starts out with a rather challenging situation. The same year, we were dealing with a publicly listed stock corporation, so not the easiest kind of corporate animal you can think of in Germany. It's rather bureaucratic form of enterprise. Our client was the majority shareholder, holding 65% roughly of the stock in Softline AG. And fortunately for us, there was another anchor investor involved who held a little bit more than 10%. So we knew at the beginning that together with the anchor investor, we would end up with 75% or in excess of 75% voting power in a restructuring plan, which was very important outset. The company, of course, was loss-making, and it was dependent on our client to provide further financing, which our client did for some time. And our aim was then to fully integrate the company into the client's group, which is not the easiest task at hand because we were dealing with a stock corporation in Germany. So the corporate governance structure there is completely different to the corporate governance structure you would usually have in a limited company, private limited company, which we use as a part of a group company. In Germany, you've got the board system, you've got basically control rights, which run through the supervisory board. So it's not easy to exert control and instruction rights in a company like this. So the task we were facing was basically, how can we take this company private and how can we restructure it in one go with a maximum of legal certainty? That was the aim or the task we were dealing with. And of course, as always, there were various options which were on the table, but only the Starbuck option allowed us a combination of financial and corporate restructuring to combine both. That's why we ended up with using, in the end, the Starbuck option. So in a nutshell, what did we do? I think the first thing, one of the most important ones we did, is we immediately brought a company legal advisor on board. So we were advising the shareholder and we needed a restructuring team on the ground advising the company because we knew it would only work that way. And that was, in that case, Heuking, the colleagues at Heuking, very experienced restructuring team here in Germany. So that was very, very important. And we brought also a restructuring nominee or got in touch with one. So what we call a Restrukturierungsbeauftragter in Germany. That was, in that case, Mr. Flöter. I think the part of the audience from Germany pretty much or pretty likely knows him, a very experienced insolvency administrator. That was the first thing. Second thing we did is we secured basically an agreement on the restructuring terms with the anchor investor. So we could secure the 75% voting threshold and we basically agreed a term sheet for the restructuring. We then instructed a Big Four auditor firm to provide a liquidity planning and set up a restructuring concept. In that case, we worked with an IDW S11 and beefed it up towards the end to make it basically fit with what we needed for the startup plan. So we can't just use an IDW S11, has to be modified a little bit. We then secured bridge financing. So we put a bridge financing in place from our client to pay for the extra restructuring costs and for the immediate cash needs that the company had to bear. Then the filing for the Starbuck was made. So before that, we had everything in place. Then the filing was made so that we could receive procedural protection from the Starbuck. And we filed for a public Starbuck because the company was publicly listed anyway. So it made total sense to go for a public Starbuck in that case. And that gave us also recognition within all of the member states in the European Union. And what did we file for? So what was the content of the restructuring plan? Three things. First one was a capital reduction to zero. So we reduced the capital of the AG to zero, then increased the capital again to 50,000 euros. And the sole subscription right to those new shares was issued to our client. So the other free float shareholders didn't receive a subscription right. Then we put a new financing element in the plan, which secured the going concern prognosis, so the fully financing of the company for 18 to 24 months. And we changed the legal form of the company to a private limited company, so from an AG to a GmbH. And we put that also in the plan. It's been done a couple of times outside of the plan. We decided to go for it in the plan itself. What we didn't do in the plan were we amended the existing shareholder financing. So we rolled everything into a loan framework agreement and gave it a new terms and in particular a new repayment date. And that was done outside of the plan, made conditional upon the plan becoming effective. And as a last step, once the plan had been sanctioned, we had to get all these capital measures registered at the commercial registry. So that was the last step. And that was basically putting everything into place. And once everything was registered, everything became effective. So just to sum things up, I think the steps we used were the delisting of Softline AG. It's now 100% owned by our client. It's now a company which is transformed from an AG into a private GmbH with a completely new corporate governance system, so easily to manage as a group company. And most important of all, it's financially stabilized and fully solvent.
Thank you, Christopher. And moving over to Simon, I understand that this Softline StarUG is groundbreaking in various ways. In what respects was this restructuring a first?
Thank you, Dawn. So far, we have seen various StarUG proceedings in Germany, but all of these proceedings had different groups, different classes within the restructuring plan and involved certain creditor groups. The StarUG proceedings we have seen so far in the German market interfered with certain creditor rights, mainly in order to restructure the debt by making a haircut or making certain amendments. In the Softline StarUG proceeding, the groundbreaking first was that it was the first public case with one class of shareholders. So the restructuring plan only had one class, which only were the shareholders. So only the shareholders voted on the plan. And basically, that's one of the groundbreaking firsts for this restructuring. Another first in this restructuring case was a combination of capital measures and the change of legal form, which Christopher already mentioned. The StarUG proceeding itself, or the StarUG itself, provides a wide element of tools which can be used in order to restructure a company from a corporate perspective and from a financial perspective. And in the Softline StarUG, we used a combination of the capital measure and then also the change of the legal form. So Softline was an AG, a stock corporation. We had to do certain capital measures, capital reduction to zero and a capital increase. And then in order to have private limited company, which fits into a group structure, we had to change the legal form. And we did this within the restructuring plan itself.
Thank you, Simon. And just moving back to Christopher, in what ways does the case set a useful precedent? So in what ways could this precedent be used in future cases? And what are the key takeaways from the case?
One important use as a precedent is, in my view, that you can use it as a blueprint for takeovers of listed companies which are distressed. We need the distressed element because otherwise you can't use a StarUG. You need to be impending illiquid to enter a StarUG proceeding. So if you have a distressed company as a takeover candidate, I think the StarUG proceeding is a new addition to your takeover strategy. And I think that's what a little bit was also groundbreaking here, that we used it for the first time, rather from this angle, and did the restructuring of the company together in the StarUG plan. So we brought it together. But one important element was the takeover element for sure. And what you need, of course, is the 75% majority. So you need to be certain that you get to the 75%, either because you've already acquired a significant stake or because you are in a situation where you can act together with others. And of course, you can only leave the Starrag proceeding if the company is then fully financed, fully solvent again. So that's important. You need to do that task. So you need to put money on the table. That's for sure. I think it's also a blueprint for, as Simon has already said, for a new type of Starrag proceeding where we're not interfering with creditors' rights. So we used it with just one class of shareholders, no creditors involved, and only aimed or mainly aimed at the corporate reorganization of the company. So if you have a case where you need to restructure a lot of bank debt, for instance, then of course you can't do it that way. But if you have a case where you want to, let's say, reorganize the corporate structure and the restructuring burden is borne mainly by the shareholders, so we have a single shareholder who's able to do that, then this type of Starrag might be interesting for the future. Another point I think is quite interesting as well, and that is that we didn't ask the shareholder assembly, so general assembly of shareholders or stockholders, for their permission before we enter into the Starrag proceeding. That is an element in the Starrag which is debated in the German literature, whether or not you can do this. And our case was one, not the first one, to be honest, but one of the first cases where the court clearly said, if it's a stock corporation, this is fine. Yeah, you don't need to ask the general assembly of shareholders. Because otherwise, it would be kind of an absurd consequence, because then you would basically ask something which you decide later on anyway. So if the result would have been the same in our case, we would have 75%. That would have been the majority to enter into the Starrag. So it would be a pure formality to do it, and would have only cost time. And the court completely went along with that reasoning. I think one further point is that it is usable, the Starrag, to resolve corporate law blockages. Yeah. So if you have a situation where decision-making or restructuring decisions are blocked or hindered by individual shareholders or groups of shareholders, you can think about a Starrag now, because this is then really helpful. In our case, this was not necessarily the case because the other anchor investor was very pro restructuring, so very helpful. What we were dealing with was free float, which was not really involved, hard to involve, and not non-responsive actually to the restructuring, because it were individual shareholders who weren't that much involved in the daily doings of this business of that company. So in these cases, again, you can basically use the Starrag to clean this up. Now, you also asked about the key takeaways. In my view, there are four. I think the most positive one for us was that the Starrag proceeding actually works, and it's a flexible and quick procedure. So that was a little bit unknown, and it was a little bit debated also in Germany whether it's really that flexible if you compare it to a VOA, for instance, or if you compare it to a restructuring plan. But I think our proceeding clearly showed you can do a restructuring plan if you focus on corporate reorganization within 3 months, if you are in touch with the court and all the other involved parties and keep everyone basically informed and aligned, then this is easily doable. I think the other key takeaway for us was how important the restructuring nominee is. It's not binding to include one in Germany in any case, only for certain cases. I think we could even have argued in our case that we wouldn't need one, but it was extremely helpful to have a restructuring nominee, an officially appointed nominee by the court on board, because the nominee acts as a representative also between the interests of company, looks at the interests of all of the other stakeholders involved and communicates that to the court. Extremely helpful thing. I would always advise to do it that way. And I think what was also very important is that we got in touch, or in that case, the colleagues at Heuking got in touch very quickly and at a very early stage with the commercial register. The thing that shouldn't happen is that you have a sanctioned plan and then you end up at the commercial register not registering what is in your plan. I mean, that would be extremely unhelpful. Therefore, it's very, very important to, once you have the plan ready, send a draft to the commercial register judge and to get both judges, the commercial register judge and the restructuring judge, basically talking to each other, if possible. I mean, that would be, and that happened in our case, and that would be, I think, the best outcome. And last but not least, fourth point for me was it is better not to go into these proceedings overly aggressive or overly confrontational, because that then you can't run this procedure as smoothly as possible. In our case, for instance, our client there was no need to pay a compensation to the other shareholders, the free float, because the comparative calculation by the big four clearly showed that they were completely out of the money in this case. But in our client decided to pay compensation nonetheless. And that these types of non-confrontational behavior, I think, helped to bring a case over the line and to avoid unnecessary events from happening.
Thank you, Christopher and Simon. Thank you both for sharing your insights into this case with us today. And to our audience, thank you for listening to DebtWired. I'm Dawn Grocock. You can download or listen to more episodes of DebtWired on Apple or Spotify.